Welcome to the Wild Adventures Podcast, the podcast where we get to hear people's life stories and see where they've identified adventure in their life. My hope for you as a listener is that you come away from this podcast inspired to make every day an adventure. I'm your endlessly curious host, Marlene Lowe, and my passion is in hearing and collecting your stories. Today we hear from Marek Zimlewski. He's an entrepreneur, investor, and best-selling author of Chasing Black Unicorns. Marek's got a fascinating story of growing up in Poland and making his way to Nigeria, from building the Amazon of Africa to being put on Interpol's most wanted list. He really does have a passion for making change in the world and is a huge advocate for business in Africa. His real-life goal is simply to leave this world a slightly better shape than what it was when he arrived.
Hi there, so my name is Marek Zimlewski. I guess you could call me an online entrepreneur because all my life I was opening, building businesses that have been operating in the online space. I spent the last 10 years in Africa and most of my activity is actually on the quote-unquote black continent. Mm-hmm. I'm an investor as well, but I guess two most known businesses that are linked to me is Jumia, which is an e-commerce platform, the biggest one in Africa, which went public on New York Stock Exchange last year. Mm-hmm. And also Sunroof, which is a solar, actually not so online anymore, but a solar technology company from Europe, also very active in Africa. After writing a book and being focused with the book promotion and my charity for a year and kind of taking a break from the professionals part of my life, I think I've recharged my batteries and I'm slowly going back on 100% into business again, because I had like this this kind of like a half and half period of my life last 2 years. That's what I'm doing. Hindsight, right? But it was no choice really for me. I really wanted. I was this Polish dude working in Poland all his life and building businesses. But I was in the so-called startup ecosystem where you are very connected to the rest of the world because it's the internet in the end. So you would read TechCrunch and watch CNN and just be connected to the rest of the world while being stuck in Poland. And it really creates that urgency and that need to do something international. And I just wanted to find a way for myself to taste the international business. And there's this company from Europe, actually based out of Germany, called Rocket Internet, mm-hmm. which is considered one of the biggest online companies in the world that builds online businesses. It's like if you were living in the States and you probably want to work for Apple or Google if you want to have a career in the online space. If you live in China, you probably want to work for Amazon, Alibaba for a while. But if you're from Europe, you want to work for these guys for a year or two because having them on your CV opens all the doors. So I was like, let me just try to get any type of job, investment analyst, fund manager, anything related to capital markets I could do with them. And I just sent my CV. And at that time they said, well, we are actually interested in going to Africa and investing some money there. And we're looking for this initial team of managers to do it for you guys.
Yeah.
And they were like, do you want to do this with us? I mean, we're not going to pay you that much, but if you build a business with us and it works, you're going to get shares. So I was like, okay, why not? Let me do that. And I was supposed to go to Nigeria just for a couple of months for like a research project. And then I stayed 4.5 years.
Wow. And it sounds...
This dog, I have to stop. This dog is so cute. I don't mind at all. It's so funny. He's trying to get so much attention.
He craves attention. I can be sitting silently and he's fine. And then as soon as I start talking to someone else, he needs...
He's jealous.
Yeah, he gets jealous. So from everything that I've seen, you seem to really fall in love with Africa. Why is that?
It's a love and hate relationship, really. sometimes very toxic as well. I guess it really resonated with my personality, where, I mean, you have to love it or hate it, because I really thrive on chaos. I like the chaotic environment. For me, it was business. I treated business always as a game, really. I was never good at sports, but I wanted to win. And, you know, many people go to business because they want to win, yeah, in a way. They want to be successful. You can be an artist, you can be an actor, a rock star, or a famous Formula One driver or a football player, but you still have that ego. You want to go to business. And at some point in my life, I just realized that certain parts of my personality will not go away with age. I'm allergic to Excel, and that's not going to change. You know, I like change, and the fact that I like change will not change. I know that already. So it's great to do something in a very chaotic environment like Frontier or Magic Markets of Sub-Saharan Africa, because, and it's going to sound cheesy, but this is the fact. It gives you a lot of satisfaction to do the business there, and it's addictive in a way, that chaos. Mm-hmm. In Europe, I could build another boring business, another mobile app, probably try to get some money out of millennials' credit cards. But market seems, in Europe, it seems you have that feeling that Europe is about to end. and you go to Europe, you go to Africa, and it's like everything is just buzzing with life, and that vibe, I really don't know how else to describe it. People love it and they stay for many, many years, or hate it and they leave after a couple of weeks or months.
Well, that's that. We always used to say that you love 10% of Africa, 90% is shit, but the 10% makes up for all of the 90% that's shit.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
So what do you think it takes to be a business leader in Africa?
Well, to be honest, I don't know. I don't consider myself a business leader. Okay. I am not the best leader. I am not the best manager. Mm-hmm. Because these are not the only people that are needed in business. I think I was always a good launcher of businesses. I was a good person in sales, in raising money for the companies. Mm-hmm. But when the business became bigger, I would always hire people better than me, because I realized where my weaknesses are. And instead of working on my weaknesses, I decided I'm going to hire someone that is good to fill my weakness, and I'm going to focus on my strengths to make them even stronger. Having said that, when I work with successful business leaders or managers that I look up to, I wouldn't say they are in any business leaders in the States or in Europe or in any other part of the world. They have to be charismatic, and they have to be able to lead by example, and all the other cheesy words. I don't think there's any silver bullet.
Yeah.
I would definitely say that you have to be even more versatile and even more bulletproof in Africa than anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because I've done business in Poland, in Eastern Europe, in many Eastern European countries, in more than 10 countries in Africa. Now I've been living in, then I've been living in Spain, and the last couple of years also Central America because of my girlfriend. So I had a comparison, a pretty decent comparison of doing business in different parts of the world. And I would still defend the thesis that Nigeria, Kenya, as a business environment, is one of the toughest, at least out of the ones I've ever been involved in.
So one of my personal opinions on that has always been that Africa doesn't really have a safety net. If you fail hard. There's no one there to catch you. Whereas in what would be considered first world countries, you've got a safety net of the government, et cetera, that can kind of, that you can leverage to your advantage through various means. But
yeah,
which are great, they're fantastic. But in Africa, that there's almost that, like you said, that cutthroat, that if you don't make it, it's going to feel really badly. So you really need.
It's so true. It's a very good observation. Yeah. You just reminded me of this. There's this meme on the internet in the first world, so-called first world, quote unquote. I'm doing air quotes for those people listening. That's you know, there's this, the meme is supposed to motivate people that they say, look, this is how Google started, and they show like a garage of a house. This is how Apple started, garage of a house, Amazon, Hewlett Packard, and so on. So what stops you from being successful if all those businesses started in a garage?
Yeah.
And then the answer is some guy from Africa saying like, my parents don't have a house. So.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. So it's a much different starting point. Yeah. And it makes it hard. And then obviously you being from Europe, coming to Africa with essentially investment money and network of contacts, there's always going to be this ambivalent position towards you, because on one side, yes, you are the foreign investor, that we all want your money, you can't build an economy without foreign investment, we all know that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're always going to be accused of people essentially saying that you're taking advantage of your white privilege, and whatever you're doing is neo-colonialism. So there's always this like, you know, the two sides of the coins, and they go to extremes in terms of how positive the reaction to what you're doing can be and how negative it can also sometimes get. And you as an investor or an entrepreneur, a foreign entrepreneur, a white entrepreneur, you're not going to run away from the history that is still very, very fresh.
Mm.
You can travel to Latin America. No one really remembers what the Spaniards did because it was 500 years ago. And they, you know, there's not too many people to say because they've killed everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in Africa, the history is still fresh. And because the British Empire or the Spanish Empire hasn't done as much bad things as they've done in Latin America, there are people that remember this. Yeah. And we're getting into history, but it's a very complicated aspect, which is linked to business, although it's a social aspect, which I guess also makes it so interesting in a way. And so, because challenge is interesting.
Yeah. So speaking of challenge, I want to take you to the opening chapter of your book, where you paint a very scary story that maybe not many people will have been a part of. And that's getting to the airport in Warsaw and getting arrested. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so let's start like in a Hitchcock movie. Yeah? So I was flying from Warsaw to London, and the lady at the airport, I'm stopped, and they are saying that there's an arrest warrant in the system under my name, and I have to be transported to Nigeria, and I'm accused of high scale, so again, air quotes, high scale financial fraud, and the potential penalty for this is 21 years in jail. and that's really what happened to me. A long story short, without giving too much away, my almost 9 years of business adventure in Africa has given me most extreme adventures of my life, both positive and negative. Positive, many great businesses we've launched. One became, you know, publicly listed company, but also a lot of negative events. One of them is a situation when essentially someone is trying to take over the company you have built. And there are many ways to do that, unfortunately, especially in emerging markets. And it's not only an African thing. It can happen It could happen in Poland in the 90s. It could happen now in Russia and so on and so on. So we're not painting a bad picture here about Nigeria. Basically, in a country like Nigeria, let me just put it frankly, you can buy an arrest warrant on anyone. And the scheme of taking over companies, especially from foreigners, is that the arrest warrant is on you. You are arrested. And the only way for you to get out of jail is signing some papers.
Yeah.
And usually the papers you have to sign are basically giving away the company. And that was the scheme that I fell for without giving out too much. The luck in my situation, which the huge luck of my life, which allowed me to really then later won the case and write a book about it and defend the company and everything, is because at that time when this landed in the system, I was not in Nigeria. I was actually in Poland because I went for Christmas. I changed my plans last minute. I was supposed to stay for Christmas in Nigeria. In order to also explain how is that possible that suddenly from Poland I'm being transported to Nigeria, you have to mention Interpol, which is another like a topic for a book. And if you don't know anything about Interpol, then you're lucky. Then don't worry about that. You haven't missed a lot. Basically, Interpol is a very noble institution that is supposed to connect police organizations all over the world. And obviously, when there's a criminal from one country, you don't want that guy to go to another country and leave as if nothing happened. The police organizations want to cooperate with each other. The problem is Interpol is so big and there's hundreds of thousands of cases flying around every day, every week. No one controls it. And there's a difference between an arrest warrant from Switzerland and Nigeria. You know what I'm talking about, the democratic system, corruption, and so on and so on. But no one checks it. And Interpol faces the same problems that Facebook or YouTube are facing now. It was great when they started, but now there's just too much content and there are people posting content that they should never post. And if they don't want to take it down, even they have no right to, because for example, in my case, the arrest warrant was obviously illegal and it was paid for. Good luck writing Facebook, right? And asking them to take it down. You know what you're going to have to face. So in my personal case, the legal battle for basically clearing my name and being able to travel again, because essentially I was in a house arrest for almost 2 years. I couldn't travel out of Poland. It did result in a positive verdict that this was all a attempt. I mean, the court couldn't say it was an attempt to take over my company, but the court said the arrest warrant is illegal. Take it down. This is a free man. He hasn't done anything wrong. At some point, I've decided because my experience is so unusual, I might want to write a book about it. Because I always wanted to write a book, but I guess if you're doing business for 10 years, and especially online business in Africa, there's not too many people doing business in Africa, but again, online business, out of all the sectors it could be in, and then Interpol, everyone was telling me, you have to write a book, you have to write a book. And I did, and I first wrote it and published this in Poland, and it became a huge success in Poland, and then we've decided to also publish this in other languages, so English and Spanish and so on.
Yeah. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I saw that all the proceeds of or the what you make from a book, you're actually donating to charity. Is that right?
Yes. Well, that's another interesting story, because I didn't want to be accused for making money out of the book, because I have other sources of income. I also didn't want to be accused of, I don't know, making money out of talking bad stuff about Nigeria, because I've been like attacked many times that I am giving a disservice to Nigeria because I'm talking about the bad stuff that happened.
Yeah.
But if you get closer to my activity, you will know that I'm using this example to actually tell a lot of good stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And that one negative story gives me the legitimacy to talk also about the good stuff and so on and so on. And I decided, okay, let me give the money to a charity. And I started investigating what type of charity I could give the money from the book to. And oh my God, it's another Pandora box, yeah? The charity model in Africa, I mean, it's absolutely broken. And I figured if I want to do something charity related, I think I'm going to have to, I want to do it on my own, because I don't want to give this money to those guys, because I literally think that they are doing more bad than good, yeah?
Yeah.
So long story short, we've launched a very, very small charity helping one particular school in Nigeria, in Borno State, basically building a school from ground up, because the orphans which are schooled there, they had no building. They were literally sitting on the ground with a blackboard being on a fence in the sun. So it was crazy. So we basically just opened this entity, that the foundation, to send the money from the book there, then to Nigeria, and then build a school, and then give a scholarship to the brightest students from that school, and so on and so on. So that also became like a project itself.
Yeah.
Very time consuming. So that's why I told you, like, last 2 years was really about my book and other stuff than business, and now I'm just slowly coming back from retirement.
So what does the future look like for you? What are you hoping to, what next adventure do you have? Because it's hard to top what you've already been through.
Yeah. I'm really excited about where the technology is going in terms of trying to minimize human effect on the climate change.
Yeah.
There are things we can't change, but there are things which we can slow down. And when I look at fossil fuels, I'm really not worried. My focus is not climate change itself. My focus is that how can we feel safe if the world runs on stuff which is about to end?
Yeah.
I mean, we have to find a long-term solution. So this is what really drove me to solar energy, which happens to be, at least for now, the only technology that can be affordable for everyone.
Yeah.
I don't imagine myself having a micro nuclear power plant in my basement just yet, but I can have something on my roof.
Yeah.
And there's also a big democratization, hopefully happening in that space. Just like many years ago when internet really made everyone a micro publisher, everyone can post content now, me, you and so on, not the big media companies like they used to. The same thing is happening in the power space where you used to have those nation state-run companies that controlled everything. And now you have neighbor selling power from his house to the other neighbor.
Yeah? Yeah.
So that also, there's a big, big change, also social change related towards it, not only technology, because it's gonna affect the economy and the way people live and so on and so on. So that's really exciting. And just like I was super excited in the last 9 years to build e-commerce really in Africa, which is still one of my big fashion, sorry, I'm talking about passion. in order to keep growing and keep learning, I've decided to focus some of my time on the solar energy, because it's not only for Africa, the whole world needs this. And also for me, I still keep learning. You know, this is the first business that I've invested in that actually produces something you can touch.
Yeah.
Because when you read my book, you realize that all my life I've been working in the virtual reality business, because it was always finance. You can't touch the finance, really, or insurance or stocks, or unless you print the certificate, right? You have the one under your name.
Yeah.
And then you had software or websites. And this, like, it's so exciting that my company actually produces something that people live under. It's a totally different level. And on a personal level, this is super, super exciting for me. All those, you know, climate change related stuff aside, and the fact that it's also a great business financially, I see this as a great learning curve for the next 10 years to come. Like last 10 years, almost 10 was Africa, and now it's solar for me. So I always try to give myself, now that I think I'm smarter than I used to be, give some goals to learn, because I guess when you stop learning, you start getting old.
That's true. Yeah, I couldn't say it better myself. Yeah. If you stop learning, you stagnate, and then everything's downhill from there.
Start dying. Yeah.
It's an interesting way to go as well, because like solar has become a lot more affordable for just anyone. I mean, I've got a power bank that I can charge using solar. So it's become so affordable for people to have it in their homes. Yes. And no longer something that only the very wealthy can afford to have. And that same with technology, it used to be something that only the very wealthy could have, and now everyone has a form of technology and can learn.
It's a natural, I think, order of things. You need the early adopters are always going to pay the premium, but then with scale, everything gets cheaper. And also the more attention a certain technology has, the more bright minds think about improving it.
Yeah.
10 years ago, solar power was only in the market really because of huge government donations. But the efficiency of solar technology has increased by an order of magnitude. I'm talking about 5 times, 10 times more efficiency than it used to be. We were not talking about some incremental changes or year over year. So now it's finally seems to be, it make economical sense, financial sense for an average Joe without some crazy government donations. So that's very, that really makes us hopeful.
So the other thing I wanted to ask is, where did your passion for technology stem from? Because I quite like your starting story, if you will.
I guess so I was born and raised in this very, very small city of Koszalin in Poland, 100,000 people. And I was born in a raised in a very classic family, traditional, let's just say. Mom was a teacher, father was a soldier. And I could see people around living and dying in the same city all their lives. Mm-hmm. But then we had satellite TV. So I would watch CNN and MTV, and I knew what's happening in the rest of the world. And I was always I was so afraid of dying in the same place I live all my life. And for me, being involved in technology, I thought will be the window to the world that will allow me to, this dog is so cute.
Oh, no.
We're gonna have to cut it, yeah. It was a window to the world that will allow me to be able to travel and work and so on. Obviously, it was a big lie because you can't run an online business purely remotely. You're always going to have people, you're always going to have a company and so on and so on. But there's a certain level of freedom of movement it gives you.
Yeah.
That I'm now really enjoying. And then that's where everything else came afterwards. And I was extremely lucky that, you know, in the last 10, 20 years, technology was one of the best sectors to be in, considering the growth. But it wasn't a calculated decision, just like in Africa. With Africa, it was a coincidence that they actually wanted someone in Nigeria. And I was there. I was actually reached out to them. Everything else kind of fall into place. But in Africa, it was pure coincidence, like I told you, and technology was that belief it will give me freedom of movement, which was partially true as it happened later.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to read your book, where can they go?
Yeah, my name is so hard to pronounce. I have a website which is pronounced the way the book is pronounced. So the book is called Chasing Black Unicorns, chasingblackunicorns.com. Mm-hmm. It's really like a one-stop shop for everything around my activity. So both my business endeavors, the book, the foundation, where all the money from the book goes to, it's like a one stop. And thanks for allowing me to say that.
And can people donate straight to the foundation if they like as well?
Yeah, you can. There is a bank account where you can pay with PayPal. However, I want to say this because my goal is not to make people pay money to my foundation.
Yeah.
If you're going to buy my book, you're going to help the foundation anyway, but I hope you're going to buy the book for the book itself. Without talking too much about it, I would consider myself a successful person in this foundation context if the case of my foundation will influence you to open your own foundation. I think the world needs, it can be a micro, it doesn't need to be a foundation in the legal sense.
Yeah.
It can be anything. The world doesn't need another big foundation. The world needs more people being active in their own microcosmos. And there's so much we can do on our own. There's no one can help everyone. Again, it's going to sound cheesy, but if everyone helps someone, that's doable, and it's going to have a much, much better effect. I am here to motivate each one of you that is listening to, at some point in your life, do something charity related, but on your own. Don't just send money.
Yeah,
that's easy. And it's going to make you feel better, but most likely you're going to contribute to the status quo, and the status quo is not what we want.
You know what, that's really true, because what the big foundations do is great, but it's when you're an individual, if you can directly see the impact of what you're doing has on another person, that is so inspirational to yourself to see how you can help enable someone else live the life that they are so passionate about. And there are things that everyone can do in their local communities, in their local cities. You don't have to go to the other end of the world to help someone in your area. Because if you help that one person, you have no idea what they then go on to do. And they could be the next world leader in something. And it's all thanks to something small that you did to help enable that. I love that your message is be a better human, almost. Help people around you.
not my intention to preach, but this is an important thing to mention. Yeah.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with the audience?
Buy the book. let me tell you why I wrote this book. I always wanted to write a book, obviously, at some point in my life, but didn't think it's going to happen that fast. Then when I was traveling to Africa, I figured no one wrote any serious book about business in Africa. I don't want to sound like I'm the only one right now, or my book is that cool, but I couldn't find any proper literature about business in Africa from a practical standpoint, because all I could read is some university professors trying to analyze and overcomplicate everything.
Or
some adventure books, you know, like this guy has balls, he drove a bike through Sahara Desert, that's cool, but I want to talk business, right? My Africa is airports, cities, you know, metro and so on, and offices. And I figured that maybe my experience will be unique, the online business in Africa. And then the whole Interpol thing happened. And also it's a journey of a guy that started as a teenager somewhere in a very small city of Poland, and then how I ended up on being on most wanted Interpol list. Mm. Also trying to analyze how your personality changes. Many people say it's also a motivating book in a way.
Yeah.
But if the book is bad, you supported the foundation and it works a great couch supporter. Or you can use it to start the fire in your fireplace. Yeah. Well, so chasingblackunicorns.com.
Yeah. You're very good at writing. You're very good at painting a picture, and you sit there going, shit, what's going to happen next? So I think everyone should read it as well.
I had a good editor. Yeah. Thanks for noticing this. Yeah. She did a great job with making this book readable.
So, okay. Last question for you. What is the biggest lesson that you have learned about yourself in writing the book?
It's going to sound super cheesy because it's going to sound like I'm a coach or something. But again, it's sometimes so refreshing to see that all the truths in life are out there, but you just have to understand them on a different level. Mm. I've analyzed every bad thing that happened to me.
Yeah.
And then I reverse engineered it. Like, where did it start? Mm-hmm. And it always started with me saying something stupid or choosing to do something with the person I shouldn't. It always started with a bad communication with someone.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that I take responsibility for what happened to me because it gives me power to change it. It's not my fault, but it was my responsibility. There was my part in it. Like the guy that really broke the law, bribed the police to put the arrest warrant. Because he wanted to take my company from me. It all started with me telling him that he's a stupid old man and I'm going to tell him how to run a company, right? I pissed him off and he wanted to teach me a lesson because he was this powerful man in Nigeria.
Yeah.
But I was this young cocky CEO that thought he's on the top of the world. And it was really eye opening for me to see, okay, it's not my fault, but it's my responsibility. And I like to see that because it gives you that power of being able to change if anything happens. Yeah. That's what the book gave me, because you write everything down, you look at all your whole life in from hindsight. The good thing about writing your biography early is that you still have time to change, because the writing your biography on a deathbed, like what's the point? Like if you just learn something, right?
So we're looking for at least three more books from you, right?
I hope not. I hope I will have no dramatic adventures anymore. just some boring books about business, maybe. No Interpol.
So another story shared around the campfire. If you want to share your story or join the Wild Adventures podcast community, make sure to check us up on our website, which is www.thewildadventurespodcast.com, checking out LinkedIn, Patreon, Facebook, and Redbubble. If you like what you heard on today's episode, then leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and help spread the stories. Also, if you want to share your story, then you can fire me off an email to contact@thewildadventurerspodcast.com. Till next time, my wonderful wildlings, I hope you have a fantastic weekend and you have plenty of adventures to share with us come Monday morning. Bye!